your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to a new episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Wednesday night, August 27th, 2025, as we record this show. The Chicago White Sox, for the first 16 innings of this series against Kansas City, were in great shape. They won on Monday 7-0 in one of the easiest victories of the season. Martin Perez was outstanding on Tuesday night as the White Sox were up 4-0 after 7 innings. Then the bottom fell out. The bullpen blew another lead, and Wednesday was embarrassing as Corey Lee pitched in a 12-1 loss. So the White Sox are now 48-85. They finished 3-10 against Kansas City in 2025. They still need two more wins to clinch the season win total over, but they got some bad injury news. Luis Robert Jr. was pulled from Tuesday's game early as he suffered a hamstring injury. Here's White Sox general manager Chris Getz explaining the extent of Robert's injury.
We MRI'd him, and you know, this is a grade 2 strain. And so what comes with that is, you know, several weeks. We don't know precisely, you know, at this point of the year, you know, time is not necessarily a friend with players returning. So, you know, there is a chance that perhaps he doesn't make it back by the end of the year. But our focus at this point is you know, addressing the hamstring. And yeah, it's unfortunate news. You know, Louis is, you know, he's very disappointed, as you would expect. Obviously, it's a hit for us, because Louis had been playing so well. I mean, his resurgence in the second half, it was documented. I mean, he was impacting our team, and the reason why we've been able to get, you know, more wins is because a lot had to do with Louis Robert's performance on both sides of the ball. And you know, the other night he had one of the better center field games that I've seen from him. So to lose him is certainly a hit. But at this point, we're going to get him healthy and ready for, you know, prepare him to, you know, come back here or get ready for next season.
With the odds not in Robert's favor to return this 2025 season, what about that $20 million decision for next year?
We're committed to Louis. You know, you look back at what he's done with our team, you know, even a little bit before the second half began, and, you know, he's done really well against lefties, and, you know, he's had glimpses against righties. You look at the defense, the base running, you know, he was showing, you know, everyone what he's capable of doing, and can be such a boost to this lineup and this team, and that's why, you know, we're talking about it today, because he's missed. But yeah, injuries are part of the game. They've unfortunately been part of his history. I think he's played in about 110 games this season, and you know, he's really risen in terms of the impact on this team and the league, and you know, and a lot of that quality work it, you know, happened in this you know, second half window. So you know, for what he's capable of doing, the talent, the impact that he can have on this club, you know, we like having Louis Robert here.
Getz admits that losing Robert for a significant time, again, is tough for the White Sox, but from a general manager standpoint, he's looking forward to see who steps up in Robert's absence.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an easy thing to do just because of, you know, the production that he was providing, you know, but it's an opportunity for other players to step up. You know, it's a resilient group. It's a young, you know, energetic, optimistic group on a daily basis. So, yeah, I think everyone in the locker room and coaching staff and around the organization and fans are disappointed not to be able to watch Louis Robert tonight. And but with that being said, you know, there's still a pathway to win. There's a pathway to victory, and Will does a tremendous job in mapping that out for our players, and hopefully they can go out there and execute it.
Let's continue the conversation regarding Luis Robert Jr., recap what happened against the Kansas City Royals, and preview the upcoming New York Yankees series. Joining me is the managing editor of SoxMachine.com. It's Jim Margulis. And hello, Jim. Really bad timing and bad news with the Luis Robert Jr. injuries. We just heard from White Sox GM Chris Getz. the chances of Luis Robert returning in 2025 are pretty bleak. If Robert is out for the rest of the season, how do you assess his 2025 campaign?
I guess he could start by saying, like, he's had worse or less inspiring seasons, which is not necessarily great, but like it was an improvement on his 2024, you know, kind of barely in terms of numbers, like offensively, maybe pretty much roughly equivalent in terms of offensive production. But the way he was playing center field, the way he was stealing bases, the way he seemed like over this last month, especially like since the trade deadline, he was almost like playing unburdened. James wrote about it, basically the last possible day he could write about it, talking about how teammates had seen a different kind of Robert this year. And, you know, if nothing else, I think you can separate him from the group he was lumped in with, you know, Yoan Moncada, Eloy Jimenez. I guess Tim Anderson was in that group in terms of extension, but like Anderson, I think like his passion for playing wasn't questioned the way it was with Moncada and Jimenez. And I think like with Robert being, a non-English speaker, at least English being a second language, and missing so much time, kind of disappearing from the scene for big chunks of the time, I think you could draw your own conclusions about him and say like, yeah, he doesn't like playing, or he's just like them. He's just taking time off. Can't count on him. Got paid and stopped caring, that sort of thing. But I think you saw over the last month that he wants to be good. He wants to be great. He likes making game-changing plays. Even though the White Sox terrible this year in terms of record, like he did not cash in on the season. He looked like he wanted to finish strong. So, if nothing else, you can credit him for that and say, okay, yeah, separate him from the others in terms of just saying like, yeah, he wants to be out there. He wants to be playing. He wants to be flying around the field and doing what he can. The only question, or I guess the catch is that wanting only goes so far. I mean, it speaks to, I guess, the White Sox standards over the last decade that wanting is laudable. Like it's not given to be a prerequisite for playing Major League Baseball. But in this case, like he showed it. So there's that. Assuming he comes back, I think you can eliminate that doubt and say like, that's not a matter of desire. The question is then what's it a matter of? And just his body not being able to withstand the rigors of a 162 game season. He's only come close to that once. 145, that's a full year. Anything over 140, I consider a full year. That allows for like one injured list stint and then the occasional day off here and there throughout the season. 145, met that standard. Since then, 100, 110 games. So it's a very difficult decision, or at least maybe not a difficult decision. It sounds like Chris Getz has already made up his mind, but it's hard to count it paying off, even though I think the Robert we've seen over the last month makes you want it for him in a way that maybe he didn't inspire, leading up to that point. So here we are.
Yeah, and it does raise that question. It was asked to Chris Getz about the $20 million question now that he's going to miss. Again, there's a possibility that Robert could come back, but Chris Getz painted a picture, Jim, that just doesn't sound like the odds are in Robert's favor in returning in 2025. So the $20 million question again, which we've been talking about since the trade deadline, it just seemed after the trade deadline had come and gone that, yep, the White Sox are going to do this. And thanks to the Sox Machine commenters, from a White Sox perspective, you're really only adding $5 million, $6 million to your payroll going to next season because it's just a pay increase. Now, if Robert was a true free agent, Jim, there's no one in Major League Baseball that's going to give Robert $20
million. Correct.
The Chicago White Sox are the only team in Major League Baseball that will pay him $20 million for the 2026 season because of the club option. I firmly believe that. Robert hit free agency, He's not, I don't think he's coming close to $20 million. But this is Jerry Reinsdorf. And we've been doing this podcast for a long time. There is a whole generation of White Sox fans just like us that have only known Jerry Reinsdorf. And more times than not, we are right when it comes to thrifty spending or his mind changes on how he wants to approach an upcoming year. He does leave the door open, though. Jerry does, in surprising us, pleasantly sometimes, in spending. But with Robert missing such a significant amount of the season, 50-plus games this year, Jim, do you think that there's any possibility that Jerry Reinsdorf changes his mind and pulls the rug underneath his general manager, Chris Getz?
The one thing I'm wondering is... is the club option how Robert comes back? Is it possible he signs for less? You know, that risks him going to free agency and being open to the entire league. And he's a Scott Boras client, so I'd assume so. I'm just like throwing this out there. I don't think it's likely. I'm just voicing the possibility that if $20 million is not what anybody's going to pay him, the White Sox have the option of not paying him that either and trying to pay him less. The one thing that makes me think that like maybe Robert would be up for it is perhaps the fact that like he has seemed to enjoy coming to work. He has never voiced a desire to play anywhere else but the White Sox. And while that's, you know, you never hear anybody saying like, can't wait to get out of here. Like that's never on the record. Maybe they voice it to Bob Nightingale anonymously when everything is going, when everything's capsizing. But, you know, Robert's never said that. I think moreover, like it seems like he didn't like the trade deadline at all. He didn't like just
the attention,
worrying about, you know, having doubts about where he would be playing. So like, I wonder if there's a possibility of like him coming back on a lesser deal. The one thing that makes me think about like $20 million being, if not what he's owed, like close, is like Michael Conforto is making $17 million this year.
Yeah.
And like, so for 1 year deals on players with perceived upside, like $20 million is too much, but I wonder how far off it really is if you get like the Dodgers of the world or any other, like the Phillies. You know, we talked about him being a good fit on the Phillies. Like when you get those teams involved where like a 1 year commitment is not that big of a deal, no matter the price, like you could see that price spike up. So that's the other thing that's kind of factored into my thinking in terms of just exactly what Robert is worth is when, if he's only going to get like a bounce back contract, like a pillow contract, the annual rate could be higher than if he signed a 2 or 3 year deal, if he's trying to get guaranteed money. So I think that's the calculus, but I would be surprised if this wasn't baked into what Chris Getz said about being committed to Roberts, like
that he's already got approval from Jerry.
Yeah. And I would be surprised, like not completely surprised, because we've seen Reinsdorf change his mind or go over the head of people. And you know, we saw Rick Hahn looking like a hostage when he had to talk about Tony La Russa. So there is a precedent, but that was Jerry's close personal friend and a mistake that he wanted, you know, that he had to wait decades to reverse. This is just one player he may or may not have attachment to. So I think it's like different, but yeah, I would be surprised given how recent this conversation is that Getz is not operating with updated information in terms of Reinsdorf's ability to keep him. If it were something like before the season, yeah, we're going to extend that option no matter what. And then a whole bunch of bad information comes in on just what Robert can provide and he has to update his priors. Sure. But I think the deadline was one point of information that the White Sox were open or willing to exercise the option. And then this injury is another opportunity for Getz to change his mind or pivots or soften the language, and he's not. So I don't think you would do that if he had any indication that Reinsdorf was changing his mind.
If I were Boris, and if the White Sox wanted to play shenanigans with trying to negotiate a lower salary for next year, I would need Again, I'm speaking as if I was Luis Roberts' agent. I would need 2027 to be guaranteed. So now you're talking about club option. All right, you decline it. But if you want Robert to stay in Chicago, I would advise him, if you can give me a contract extension. I help you this year, but I need 2027 to be guaranteed. Because every agent, though, Jim, and who's got free agent clients coming to this offseason, they're all going to battle the same thing. I need as many assurances as possible I can get in 2027 to protect my client in case if there is a lock.
I don't know about that necessarily, but it does make the one-year contract more appealing to other teams, to where that price will go up. And for the White Sox too, it's a $20 million salary, but there's a $2 million buyout. So really it's an $18 million decision. So it comes down to, if you think like the if the Dodgers offer 1 year and $18 million, that's the same as the White Sox exercising their option. So like that's the kind of math involved, to where like, okay, that's why I'm skeptical that the White Sox would like try to, buy them out and then bring them back. But, you know, play Carlos games. Rodon, around the corner, coming back to guaranteed rate field. That's one example of a Boris client being brought back at a lower price, even though the rest of the league had their opportunity to get him. And the White Sox, he came back to the White Sox. And so that was kind of fresh in my mind in terms of, it's happened before. I just think that, when you mentioned the CBA, like 1 year contracts for players willing to sign 1 year contracts could be pretty appealing.
I just
teams.
Don't know how many players are going to be willing to do that. Right. Cause they, what,
well, that's why I think Robert, like he has to, like, he doesn't have a great case for his value to where like a good 1 year deal might be good enough for him.
Yeah. It's a tough situation that he's in. Cause even if you have an outstanding 2026 season, and I don't know, maybe the White Sox do pick it up again in 2027. They do have that option. They also have a $2 million buyout. And if it looks like, hey, we're not going to be playing a lot of baseball in 2027, you're not picking up that option. You don't want that money. You don't want that headache. You could address it when the league restarts. Okay, so I think if Chris Getz, who seems very confident, again, we just heard Getz in the intro of this podcast. He seems very confident that he's got Jerry's backing. I guess we can just assume they've talked about this and everyone's in agreement. They're going to pick up that option. It's just, again, it's not a distrust of Chris Getz, Jim. It's just, I don't trust Jerry Reinsdorf. I trust that Jerry Reinsdorf will change his mind between now and the decision having to be made. So I guess I would be a little surprised if they continue moving forward just because of the amount of games that Robert has missed. We'll see what happens, but it is unfortunate. Luis Robert this season finishes with 1.3 WAR according to Fangraphs. That's twice as much as he had last year, as he finished with only 0.6 WAR. His on-base percentage was better because his walk rate was better, but his slugging was still below last year. And when you look at weighted runs created plus for the entire season, Robert finishes with 83. Last year he was 84. So as Jim said, very similar offensive numbers. He was much better defensively, though, this year. That's why we saw an increase in WAR as well as his base running ability. But still a little bit on the disappointing side for a player with his talents, and hopefully good fortune is on his side going to next year, or at least a much better first half of the year, where things are pretty dour for Luis Robert. Speaking of dour, let's talk about what happened between the White Sox and Royals. For the first 16 innings of this series, things were going great. The White Sox easily won on Monday, 7-0. They're up 4-0. The Royals only have one hit going into the seventh inning. And Jim Hell breaks loose. They give up 5 runs in the final 2 innings of Tuesday's game to lose 5-4 and get absolutely blown out of the building, losing 12-1 on Wednesday. Corey Lee pitched, Jim. That's the headline for Wednesday's game. He's the first White Sox player since 1902, thanks to Chicago Sports Network for this nugget, to catch and pitch in the same game. He didn't even start in this game. He came in as a defensive replacement. So congratulations to Corey Lee. Jim, what do you make of this series for the White Sox against the Royals? Again, it was looking so good for the majority of this series and then just a plane crash.
Well, I'm pleased to report that I didn't see a whole lot of it because Charlotte is in town with for Nashville. So I was at First Horizon Park watching the Knights. And it was funny, I was watching that Tuesday night game, and I had the little score bug in the top left of my phone on the notification, just watching the number on the left go up 4-0, 4-1, 4-2, 4-4, 5. Yep, that's Kansas City. And just seeing like, and looking at the box score, then seeing Leisure and Taylor go like great. Like, you know, those are the two relievers I think the White Sox feel most confident in, especially Leisure. You know, he'd been a nice little roll. Taylor's been weird. Like, the luck is terrible, but it's also like the luck is persistently terrible enough to where like you have to start questioning, like, all right, why are they able to put him in play? Even if they're putting him in play weekly, to where like it's more, it looks like luck when it's so unlucky time and time again, like something's got to be slightly askew at the very least. So there's that. I will say that as we're recording, I had to leave tonight's game early. I watched Duncan Davitt pitch. Secondary player came over in the Adrian Hauser trade from Tampa Bay. Wanted to see what he is all about. He pitched decently. However, I'm watching, looking at the box score now, it's 11-8. The Knights have been walked off 11 times. Zach Franklin gave up 3 runs in the 9th inning to send this one to extras. So if you're looking for high leverage, late inning help from the Charlotte Knights, I don't think you're going to get it. I think that's the update there. Otherwise, I think, like, you know, we talked about when it comes to recaps and like, do you have to do separate recaps for the offense and the pitching? And I think in this case, like the first game, great. Game two, even though they scored 4 runs and left some on the table, like it was a good showing, like in terms of like their, you know, Montgomery homered again, that's cool. They created opportunities and cashed one in. Like if they created opportunities, like that's half the battle. It's just a matter of like actually getting them home. And like they, while they left runs on the table, they also scored some, and they eventually came through and built a lead that the bullpen should have protected. So that's a better showing than we saw in Kansas City. And then I just wonder tonight, how much of it was Montgomery being out with a side issue and losing Robert, and just two guys who provided a lot of the upside for the White Sox in terms of up the middle strength, Montgomery with power, Robert with speed and defense. Losing those two guys in the same game, and then you having a Aaron Civale inning that goes plummets to the bottom of the sea, just how much that kind of factors into, it's still a bad team when they lose their two most dynamic position players. You kind of got to brace for this to happen.
What do you make? So speaking of Grant Taylor, so Chris Getz talked about this, but I didn't include as far as the audio. So here is Chris Getz talking about Grant Taylor and the difference between his FIP and ERA.
Well, if you look at the expected numbers, you look at his FIP, for example, the separation between, you know, his actual ERA and his FIP is pretty wide. I think that's a pretty strong indication of, there's just batted ball luck. Now, there are some areas that could be improved and getting ahead and attacking the zone. And, you look at his ability to go north-south with his fastball and his curveball. Obviously, he's got the slider and cutters, too, as weapons. It's really just getting him attacking, and we put him in some really, you know, he's facing the best hitters on the opposing team in moments that are big, and but if you look underneath the hood, there, it's still the quality of stuff and the performance is there. I know last night was we didn't get the results that we would like, but the process was right.
So Jim, let me pose that question to you. Grant Taylor's ERA 5.53, his FIP 1.46, and when you look at WAR on Fangraphs, that's what's really fueling Grant Taylor's WAR, is because he has this very low FIP number. What do you make of this difference?
He's like the opposite of Steven Wilson, at least for Steven Wilson for a lot of the season. Just, he was among the best White Sox in Baseball Reference in terms of wins above replacement because his ERA was great, but the underlying components were pretty bad, and I think you've seen that kind of catch up to him recently. I think with Taylor, I'm not inclined to wave it away entirely as bad luck just because he is a rookie straight off of double A, and recently converted to reliever and trying to hone down his arsenal into his two best pitches when he was like a five pitch pitcher. At least four pitches and trying to get up to five. And very much a smoke thrower, but also like I can't throw my fastball 50% of the time because hitters will be looking for it. It won't look 99 if they know it's coming and I don't locate it perfectly. So I got to work in my secondary. So I imagine for him, as the White Sox try to decide his final form, and they've kept the door open when it comes to starting. I'm skeptical about that. I think it's something they give lip service to because of just how suddenly they moved him to relief. And, he hasn't been hurt. There hasn't been any kind of traumatic thing this year to where you shut the door on starting. But I also, if they want him to start, there's no reason to rush him into the bullpen now. Like they could have spent the entire season wanting him to start. This didn't do anything for him in that regard. So judging by their actions rather than their words, I would expect him to be in the bullpen for the rest of his White Sox career. So I think this might be more of an off-season project, or maybe you'll see it in September, but just pick your two best pitches, maybe your third best pitch, for lefties, to make sure that you're balanced against lefties or righties, depending on who you're facing. But gotta figure out like your bread and butter and then your plan B against both righties and lefties. And I just wonder if his arsenal is so diverse right now that he's just kind of throwing everything. And if you're not locating, or if you're locating poorly, and you don't know what your best pitches are yet, or you just haven't, you're not sequencing them right because you're not optimizing your arsenal. That might be one way where you're just giving hitters a chance to put the bat in the ball when a year from now those will be whiffs.
Yeah, Grant Taylor's BABIP against 429. That's huge. So, like to your point, Jim, when they are making contact, it's finding grass, it's finding the holes. Like to have almost a batting average close to 43%, I'm gonna get a hit by putting the ball in play against you. That's a tough way to live. I think you make some really good points, but again, he is a rookie. He started this year, what, in Birmingham? It's been a lot of transition. It's been a lot of learning. I wonder if having clarity in what your role is going to spring training next year, that you are our primary high leverage reliever, will help Grant Taylor rein in as far as his arsenal and focus, to your point, Jim, what works best for him.
Also, this is the most he's ever pitched.
27 innings.
Well, and 26 in Birmingham.
So
And four
53.
in 40 games, like at LSU, in his only full season, he threw 31 innings as a reliever, 17 games, and he had Tommy John surgery, and then he missed most of 2024. So like, he could be hitting a wall of sorts, and that just like the stuff isn't acting like it should because he's 5 months into a season, he's got 1 month left to go, and he's never thrown this much with this intensity against the hitters of quality of hitters that he's facing.
Do the White Sox entertain the idea of shutting him down?
Possibly, although when September, when you have the expanded roster and one more reliever, might give it a chance to like just really regulate his workload to where they don't have to shut him down versus like if you're starting and there's not much of a point having him go three innings the way that we've discussed starters being shut down before. I think they can manage it. If it comes to a point where like they are just churning through relievers, then maybe they shut them down. But going back to Charlotte, not many relievers really knocking on the door. I guess you can maybe move somebody to the bullpen when Sean Burke and Jonathan Cannon come back. That's their option of just not not bringing up a reliever, just bring up a starter and then shuttling somebody down. But I imagine they try to work through this, and then maybe when September rolls around, move him down the leverage ladder. Maybe just prescribe an inning without facing the best hitters in the lineup. See how it goes. Lighten his workload a little bit. They have options before a shutdown, unless like they see his velocity or his arm slot drop or just something in the biomechanics saying like, nope, he's compensating, he's laboring. This isn't going to end well.
On Saturday, September 6th, Sox Machine and Baseball Isn't Boring are hosting a live podcast at the Remova Theater. Doors open at 4 p.m. Central Time as I'll be hosting the live pregame show along with Courtney Finnecombe, chatting about this offensive surge from the White Sox, what was our favorite things about the 2025 season, and what the White Sox need to do this upcoming offseason to be more competitive in 2026. After the pregame show, we'll be hosting a live watch party of the White Sox versus Detroit Tigers game. Watch along with us while enjoying the wonderful new food menu from the Remova Grill. And don't forget about the new beer from the Remova Brewery, including Gene Honda's new brew. The show and watch party is a free event. You can RSVP either on SoxMachine.com or RemovaChicago.com. We can't wait to see everyone at the Remova Theater on Saturday, September 6th. And then finally, one point about this series with the Royals. We talked about Martin Perez, and I know I triggered James when it came to the mutual option. Martin's looked good, Jim. I know he's not throwing hard, but he's getting good results for the White Sox since coming back from his injury. I know people are already getting excited to do the offseason plan projects. Is this someone that the White Sox entertain the idea of maybe not picking up the mutual option, but renegotiate with Martin Perez to bring him back in 2026?
It's possible. They'll probably need somebody like him, depending on how the rest of the rotation shakes out, how Cannon and Burke specifically look at the end of the year, assuming Shane Smith gets across the finish line in strong form, same thing with Davis Martin. They don't need necessarily the best starting pitcher, but they could probably use somebody similar in terms of a veteran who's been there before, makes life a little bit easier for the manager. And I think with Perez, you know, we talked about before when they signed him, and I think, you know, my thought was looking at his track record, as many teams as he's played for, as many contracts as he signed, as often he's been traded, like no team, you know, maybe the Red Sox, I think, were the only one, but like no team has disliked signing Martin Perez. You know, even if he has uneven seasons or, you know, hot first half, bad second half, or just lopsided years, like he provides enough to where he earns his keep. And, you know, based on what the White Sox have said and what James has reported, just in terms of his presence in the clubhouse, the way he's connected with young pitchers, the way he's connected with the Spanish-speaking players, he fills a niche in that clubhouse. And you know, we've certainly seen him speak positively about the team's future, maybe delusionally so, in a way saying like we could be contending as soon as next season. And I would say pump the brakes a little bit, but you like the spirit, you like what he's doing. So I can see it. I can also see a case like similar to, you know, trading Eric Fetty, and like how Fetty has looked since, is like, well, we might have seen the best we're going to see from him. Like he's another year older. Fastball velocity isn't there. Let's not go back to the well. Let's look for the next Martin Perez in free agency. Somebody who we like some of the things he did last year, and we think we can shine him up nice and either trade him or, you know, something similar. I think maybe the upside is tailing off with Perez as he gets older, but, you know, he is a lefty. Lefties have a way of extending their shelf life to where I wouldn't, in the way the White Sox have spoken of him, I wouldn't discount it. Just the way we've seen the White Sox operate, it seems like they like giving one guy a shot, and then either he increases his value beyond what the White Sox are willing to pay, or, you know, in the case of Fetty, in the case of like Chris Flexen last year, where Flexen served a purpose, but also like, you know, the White Sox didn't look at him for innings when they needed innings. They found Martin Perez instead.
Well, we'll see what the White Sox do. We'll see how Martin Perez finishes the 2025 season. But he's been strong for the White Sox since returning from injury, and that has been a great sight because not that long ago we talked about how the pitching staff's running out of gas, and Aaron Civale ran out of gas tonight against the Royals in that fifth inning. Just all about getting through the finish line of the 2025 season without embarrassing yourselves on the pitching front. But Martin Perez was excellent against Kansas City. We'll talk about his next start against the New York Yankees in a moment. But let's take a moment to take a look at the White Sox home run leaderboard, because Jim's written about this. Who is going to lead the White Sox in home runs? And it's kind of a little fun thing to track Taking a look at the White Sox home run leaderboard right now, it's still Aníbal Sosa leading the team with 17 home runs. Andrew Benintendi hit his 15th home run on Wednesday. Colson Montgomery, even though he's dealing with a nagging side injury right now, has a home run in four straight games. He is the youngest White Sox rookie to ever accomplish that feat. He's got 14. Luis Robert, again, most likely going to miss the rest of the season at 14. And Miguel Vargas still at 13 home runs. Jim, if you had to submit a pick to click and who will lead the Chicago White Sox at the end of the season in home runs, who's your pick?
I want to say Colson. Like, that's my heart says Colson, just because he homers every game that he plays, basically. Just a matter of like how often he plays. The side is like, it's possibly, you know, that's what throws him off for the rest of the year and makes a prediction look foolish. But in terms of like raw power and the ability to run into one, we've seen like Daniel Palka lead the White Sox in homers. And, you know, that comes to mind in terms of just like, that's what power can do. That's what like raw brute strength can do. Like the production around it is, you know, not what you want. In the case of Palka, like defensive value is not what you want, but the power played when like he was in the zone and like the league hadn't figured him out yet. So I could see like Montgomery having a similar finish. My concern is, you know, seeing Benintendi homer, like he can get on rolls. I think that would be like the, if I were going for the most either not cynical, I would say least inspiring option of like, yeah, I guess he led the team in homers, just like you'd say when Andrew Vaughn leads a team in homers with fewer than 20. Just like, yeah, he was a team leader. We've seen Benintendi do it. Like, he could get on a roll. Aníbal Sosa's cooled off a little bit. You know, Montgomery could get hurt. Vargas is not, like, really a home run guy, and he doesn't benefit from right field the way that Benintendi does with just, like, getting the ball in the air to the right side of the outfield and just watching it sail. So I guess like Benintendi might be like my second pick, but I think Colson, like even if he just kind of like grunts his way to 20, might be enough to get it done.
Yeah. Do we have another hot streak from Aníbal Sosa before the season ends?
Possibly.
That's the question that I have. Cause I think Sosa can get to 20. I'm pretty confident that Montgomery can get to 20 if that side injury is not as painful as it sounds. I'm not so confident in Andrew Benintendi. So I think I'm with you, but if you take Colson Montgomery, I guess I'll take Aníbal Sosa and see if Sosa can outlast Montgomery, but Montgomery's coming up pretty quick. The one thing about Vargas at 13 home runs, and to your point, he's not much of a home run hitter, but Miguel Vargas is leading the White Sox in doubles by a wide margin. Miguel Vargas has 30 doubles this year. Nobody else has 20 on the White Sox roster. Second in doubles for the White Sox hitters, Michael A. Taylor, 18 doubles this year. Lenine's got 17 and Edgar Caro's got 15. Andrew Benintendi has 14 doubles. But yeah, congrats to Miguel Vargas for reaching 30 doubles. He's got an outside chance of getting to 40 doubles. He needs to have a really hot final 20 games of the season and see if he plays every single game. But that would be pretty cool if Miguel Vargas can get to 40 doubles. Another thing to watch for as a White Sox fan as we inch closer to the finish line of the 2020.
And it seems like he wants to get the 40 doubles based on the way he's rounding first. Like the guy is running hard.
I love it, though. He is running hard. I thought it was a bit careless on Monday. I was sitting in the stands like, no, he's going to get thrown out. He got lucky a couple of times. A better throw. A better pick by the second baseman covering the bag. Yeah, Vargas is going to get too bland. But you got to love the effort. And even though this team's lost 85 games, Miguel Vargas, completely opposite from last year, maybe shell shock getting traded from the best team in baseball in the Dodgers to the worst team in baseball in the White Sox. But got to love the hustle. Yeah. He's not the fastest guy, but he puts in the
effort. There's a Don Cooper quote that I use a lot, or I think about a lot, that comes up. I'd rather tame a tiger than push a jackass. That's kind of, yeah.
It's a good one, though.
And yeah, the way he's running the base, that's definitely tiger taming.
Yes, it is. To help serve as a distraction from the Chicago White Sox and what they did in the final two games against Kansas City real quick, many of you, just like us over at Sox Machine, are participating in your fantasy baseball postseason now. And if you recall, we have a mega Sox Machine league with all of our subscribers, 30 or more teams this year, as some people had to drop out during the season. We just entered into the postseason. My team, the Bridgeport Corgis, were able to get the final playoff spot. So I'm pretty excited, despite the fact that we finished 8-13 this year. We were able to get that last spot, but we had some incredible runs this year. I love this name, Dion and DeRestless. They went 20-2 this year. So fantastic to that team. In the Terry Bevington division, all four of those teams went to the postseason. The Springfield Isotopes, who are the defending champion, and they've won the Sox Machine Fantasy Baseball League 3 times. They had the 7th best overall record this year, so that's always someone to pay attention to. So if you're listening to this and you're into fantasy baseball and you would like to participate in our Super Mega Fantasy Baseball League next year, make sure that you are a Sox Machine subscriber, because we'll be inviting everyone again that participated in this year's Sox Machine Fantasy Baseball League, 30 plus teams to join next year. But if there are any spots available and you want to be part of the madness, again, another reason to be a Sox Machine subscriber, and you can become one at SoxMachine.com. For all those listening that are in the Sox Machine Fantasy Baseball playoffs, the best of luck. Except for you, Chester Lemons, you got to let me beat you at least one time this season. You can't sweep me in every single game. Well, for the Chicago White Sox, it gets pretty difficult as they wrap up this 10-game homestand with 4 games against the New York Yankees. The White Sox have not faced the Yankees this year. Their second to last series of the season is in New York before they finish the season in Washington, D.C. The Yankees are 73-60. They're third place in the American League East. They're 4.5 games back of Toronto. If the season were to end today, they would be the 5th seed in the American League, playing at Boston in that wild card round. Away from Yankee Stadium, the Yankees are a 500 team. They're 32-32, but here they come. They have won their last 4 games. They have a 4-game winning streak coming to Chicago, and they are 7-3 in their last 10. Your pitching problems for this series: Will Warren will take the ball for the Yankees against Davis Martin. That's going to be Thursday night, 6:40 p.m. Central Time. Friday, 6:40 p.m. Central Time, the return of Carlos Rodon against Yoenis Gomez for the White Sox. And then for the Yankees, it's Cam Schindler against Shane Smith. And then on Sunday, it is Luis Gill against Martin Perez. We'll be making that start against the Yankees to conclude as far as the series. And as far as just like the 30,000-foot view of this particular series, Jim, to reference one of my favorite quotes from Star Wars, I got a bad feeling about this series. After the White Sox just allowed 12 runs to the Royals, now here come the Yankees, and they're starting to get the train chugging along again, and they really need to, because they're in a tight race right now, and they still have their sights on trying to win the American League East. This is a motivated Yankees team coming to Chicago, and I hope the pitching staff holds on, and I hope Colson Montgomery can get in the lineup, because they're going to need as many runs as possible, because I think the Yankees are going to put up a lot of runs this weekend in Chicago.
Well, to touch on the last pitcher that the Yankees are throwing, I had to look up his name. It's Cam Schindler. Schindler. I do not envy John Schifrin or whoever is calling him throwing 100 or whatever, 90 pitches in a game and trying to say that name correctly every single time. I might call him Cam after a while, just to that it's real easy to drop that L.
So it's Schindler.
Schindler.
Littler.
So, yeah, so I'm looking forward to that.
Len Casper, if you are listening, I'd love to hear your strategy on how you're going to approach that Saturday start. He's gonna nail it, of course, but
yeah, probably a lot of vocal warm-ups. Yeah, probably just a lot of tongue twisters before going live on mic to make sure that
you're going to the bathroom. You gotta take a
yes, really gotta hit that L. Yeah, to the original topic you raised about the Yankees playing well, yeah. Like, Giancarlo Stanton is hitting, like, that changes a lot of things in terms of game planning. It's not like last year's choice between Juan Soto and Aaron Judge that Grady Sizemore supposedly failed, even though like both either option, either door led to death. Judge has been a little bit cool, you know, by his standards since coming back from his injury, but still, like, yeah, when Stanton's there, everybody else seems to be hitting well too. You know, that's a huge difference. So yeah, with the way the White Sox have been pitching, the way the bullpen's been pitching, I'd be really curious to see what it looks like if the White Sox have to nurse a 2-run lead across the final three innings. The one thing I'm watching, like with the Yankees, and the one potential equalizer is that you do see a lot of highlights of just errors, bad infield play, a lot of mistakes that are characteristic of like, or more characteristic of a rebuilding team. You could see that. Like, they're not the soundest defensive team or base running team. They don't have to be when they're hitting the ball the way that they are and the way like Rodon's pitching. Like, they can get by with a lot of mistakes. But we saw it last year, just, you know, the poor fundamental play that kind of characterized their postseason appearances of late has carried over this year to where if Yankees fans are complaining, that's what they're complaining about.
Yeah, because they are league average right now using the defensive metric on Fangraphs. But now that you pointed that out, that does deserve to take a look, because everything is under a microscope when covering the New York Yankees. I would hate to be a host of the New York Yankees podcast. While it is fun to talk about a team that hasn't had a losing season, I mean, what, if you're 30 years old, have you ever seen a Yankees losing season? Do you know what it's like to watch a Yankees team only win 75 games?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of experience talking Yankees fans who think that they're suffering, and then
they're spoiled. I mean,
yeah, and I have to say, have you seen what the White Sox are doing? Yeah, and looking at defensive runs saved, they're 12th in the league. It's just more the nature of their errors. They have athletes playing where they should be playing by and large, but just the brain farts, I think, kind of like Lenin Sosa. Like, he grades out decently defensively because the physical ability isn't bad at second base. It's just we've seen the decision-making lock up if something doesn't go the way it does. And the Yankees have that same kind of problem in that there is a little bit of a contagious aspect to the errors that they have made. So we could see that, or we could just see the Yankees blow the White Sox off the field to where, like, doesn't matter. But one thing to keep your eye on.
I think the goal is keep the Yankees under 30 runs over the four-game series to give yourself a chance in one of those games. Like, that's how concerned I am. Now watch the White Sox pitch amazing against the Yankees and keep them below 12 runs for the entire series. But when you take a look at the last 15 days for the Yankees and the stats, 13-game span, Jazz Chisholm, 5 homers. Trent Grisham, 5 homers. Ben Rice, 5 home runs. You mentioned Giancarlo Stanton. He's got 5 home runs. In his last 9 games, Stanton's slugging percentage is over 1,100. And it's Aaron Judge that's kind of cooled off out of all the hitters. But Aaron Judge loves, and I mean loves, White Sox pitching. So it's going to be a very tough test for the White Sox pitchers against the Yankees lineup to try to hold them in place. And hopefully the White Sox bats come through against the Yankees pitchers. And one of them is going to be Carlos Rodon. This is the first time that Rodon is pitching in Chicago against the White Sox since he left and signed with the San Francisco Giants. And when it comes to Rodon coming back, I'm sure the White Sox are going to do a video highlight for Carlos Rodon. He had that almost perfect game during his tenure with the White Sox. He was absolutely outstanding for the White Sox in 2021. Really a renaissance for his career, because post age 28, when Rodon decides to hang up his cleats, that's really when his career took off, Jim. I mean, he finally got over 20 WAR on Baseball Reference for his career this season. And I think it's kind of remarkable on just how much he changed in 2021 and the type of pitcher that he is now. I mean, it's big money with the New York Yankees, but he has finally found his groove as a major league pitcher.
Yeah, and I know that he was a little bit salty, I guess, when he left the White Sox. They didn't give him the qualifying offer, and that was like a little bit of a I think Scott Boras was thrilled. I think Rodon was thrilled to not have that weighing on him when he went into free agency. But, you know, there's always that he's somebody can be a little bit salty or likes to be fueled by things. He likes motivation. You know, he's got that dog in him and certainly been working out well for him. And I think that's probably what allows him to be good as a Yankee, even though it started pretty poorly for him with that contract. You know, his career started poorly with the White Sox, and certainly the White Sox did the bare minimum to develop him. They basically saw his arm talent out of NC State and thought, you know, I'll be a major leaguer in no time. Let's just get to the majors and we'll figure it out from there. And then you know, we saw him struggle. I think the big reason why is because like he didn't develop a 5-day routine, or like they just, you know, they didn't work on him with that. And we saw worse results with Carson Fulmer, kind of the same thing of just rushing him up no matter what. They really paid very little heed to that. I think they just got enamored with the way Chris Sale succeeded with making up as you go along. And I think we saw just the diminishing returns of using that approach for every single promising college arm that they brought in the system afterwards. But I think, yeah, he should get a video tribute. Went through a lot with the White Sox, you know, kind of like the Shawshank Redemption, you know, line about like crawled through, yeah, football fields worth of crap and came out the other side. And like, that's kind of how it worked, except, you know, I think White Sox fans were lucky enough that the other side was still with the White Sox. Like all the injuries and setbacks that he had, like the White Sox did not miss out on the Renaissance. They didn't cash in the way that they could have with it, but they did not miss out. So pleasure watching them pitch. I think I like the way that he kind of developed as a public figure at the White Sox, and that like you saw the frustration, you know, when things weren't going well, and you know, he could not necessarily be the warmest interview and give away a whole lot. But as he got better, as he got more confident and his success sticking around, I thought he became a pretty compelling voice for a team. And I like listening to his post-game comments. I like listening to his thoughts on team, even with the Giants, even with the Yankees. Like, it seems like he, you know, once he got his footing as a major league pitcher getting paid like an ace, I think personally he stepped in that role in the other regards as well.
Yeah, and I think he found a home in New York, because he and his wife Ashley, they have this Rodon Foundation that helps raise money for families that are having a tough time with pregnancies. And all the pictures from Yankees media and Yankees blog from that foundation, all the Yankees players that help contribute, it seems like Carlos has found a home in the Bronx. Wish things went better in Chicago, but at least White Sox fans and Carlos Rodon got that 2021 season. And again, when he decides to hang it up and you look at his baseball reference page, age 22 through 27 seems like a waste, but age 28 and onward, I mean, he's still got a chance to be a 30 war type of career pitcher. And that's fantastic. Not everyone gets to be a Hall of Famer. That 2014 draft, a reminder that Carlos Rodon was taken third overall by the White Sox in that draft. That draft is shaking out to be a really good one, Jim. Because going on baseball reference, 8 players were taken the first round of that draft that are already 13 war or better. And there are 2 players already at 40 plus war. So they're approaching maybe in a few seasons that conversation of being fringe Hall of Famers in Matt Chapman and Trey Turner. Rodon ranks 4th overall from that draft class in war. He's behind Chapman, Turner, and Aaron Nola. But Nola's having like his worst season ever this year for the Phillies. Logan Webb's at 20.7 war. He was taken in the 4th round. And Dylan Cease, old friend, was taken the 6th round of that draft. So a really good Major League Baseball draft back in 2014. And the White Sox got at least one great season out of Carlos Rodon during his tenure. And we'll see how Rodon does back at Wrigley Field against the White Sox on Friday.
Yeah, looking at that, the first round of that draft class, you know, remember the whole when the White Sox were trying to make a run at the worst record, or like that might have been One of the results of that season, it was the whole road to Rodon, and like the White Sox needed the first overall pick to get Rodon, and then like turns out he fell to third. And then the first two picks above him, Brady Aiken and Tyler Kolek, never made the majors. They both had flamed out high school arms, flamed out in the low minors because of Tommy John and control issues. And I think if the draft intel was correct, if Rodon wasn't available, I think the White Sox would have selected Aaron Nola. So they would have been fine either way. Maybe they would have been better off, depending on if Nola's success with the Phillies translated cleanly over the White Sox, or if his case like Rodon to where like the development wasn't going to be there and Nola had to figure out on his own as well. One thing I was trying to figure out counting real quick is how many first round picks in that draft had the White Sox employed
in 2014 from the 2014, 2016 seems like seven.
Yeah. 2014 first round draft. Let's count them. This well, they is thrilling.
Not Kyle Schwarber. Kyle Schwarber was next. He's Schwarber probably reached 20 WAR this year. So he'll join that list of the 2014.
Yeah. So you have Rodon at number three. You have Cody Medeiros with the Brewers at number 12. Tuki Toussaint went to the Diamondbacks at 16. Eric Fetty, 18 to the Nationals. Casey Gillespie, Connor's brother, never got to the majors, but was played for the Charlotte Knights, taken 20th by the Rays. You have a skip, and then Michael Kopech, 33rd to the Red Sox, and that's it. So six. Yep. That was part of their, accumulating every single prospect from the top 100 in 2017. I think that's that helped fuel it.
Yeah. Maybe that was their strategy, scouting strategy. Who needs scouts? We just need Baseball America.
It turns out the second best player from the White Sox draft that year. Right now it's Aaron Bummer, 19th round pick. Who might surpass him based on the way he's been pitching as of late? Tanner Banks, taken around before him. Didn't get to the majors till what, 29? But like, Phillies love him. Like, he's having a great year for the Phillies, just in middle relief, do everything kind of job, like 57 innings, 2.83 ERA. Like, he's doing great. And apparently by all accounts, a great guy. So good for him. But yeah, he's somebody when the dust settles, like, Bummer, I think just won the injured list. So he's out and kind of uneven. Like, it's a battle not worth watching, but come trivia time, like, somewhere down the road, it'll be curious to see who, when the dust settles, who wins that war?
Wow. Tanner Banks, the second best player the White Sox took in the 2014 MLB draft. I wonder why this franchise has been struggling for 10 plus years.
That was the Spencer Adams second round, Jace Fry third round. That was that draft.
Yeah. I was confident Spencer Adams was going to reach the majors, but... Oh, memories. Good times. Good times. Well, the final thing we'll talk about in this podcast, as we'll have a new episode as we record Sunday night to recap what happened against the Yankees and take a look around Major League Baseball. The 2026 Major League Baseball schedule was officially released on Tuesday, so cap tip to Bob Nightingale for being correct on that. The White Sox had a little fun video. As far as announcing the new schedule, the Chicago White Sox on Thursday, March 26th will be beginning the season at Milwaukee. So the 27th is an off day that Friday, and then they'll play again the 28th and 29th the following week at home against Toronto. The White Sox will have their home opener. So, Josh, what about the road trips? Well, we'll make the official announcement on SoxMachine.com on Saturday and where we are heading as far as the road trip. I can tell you, Milwaukee is not happening. And the reason is that with that being their home opener, capacity crowd, the Brewers are very good if you haven't noticed. Very cold in Milwaukee in late March. Not ideal tailgating. Yes, Bears weather and everything, but our friends, the Chicago Sports Bums, also have to prepare for their home opener tailgate, which is the following week. So we're not going to Milwaukee. You can go to Milwaukee. I might go to Milwaukee.
You're free
to
go.
One of those games.
We permit you to go.
Yes. Sox Machine will not be hosting an official event in Milwaukee for that weekend. So what are we going to do instead? we're going to ask everyone to come to Chicago. So we're going to have a Sox Machine meetup weekend on Friday, August 7th and Saturday, August 8th as the White Sox are at home against the Cleveland Guardians. If our estimations are correct, this is the final weekend before Chicago public schools start. So if you want to bring the family, we're going to get one of the tailgate areas at Raid Field. Our friends, Chicago Sports Bums, are going to help us out in hosting that tailgate on Saturday, August 8th. We'll have some meetups around Bridgeport as well. So if you haven't been to Chicago in a while, and if you want to meet your other fellow Sox machinists, circle that weekend. Friday, August 7th, Saturday, August 8th. We'll get some group tickets going on as well. We have more details on SoxMachine.com. Will there be a road trip? Yes. I am deciding between two weekends right now. Major League Baseball was not kind to me. If I could just complain for 30 seconds, Jim, this is not the greatest schedule to try to find an ideal road trip for this year. But I do have a couple weekends picked out, and we'll make that announcement on Saturday on SoxMachine.com. Your thoughts about the 2026 schedule?
Yeah, it's a bad schedule for a road trip. It's a good schedule for Sox Machine in terms of sending James on yes. road trips. There are no three-city, three-time-zone road trips to where we have to decide like whether to spend a lot of money to get them to out of the time zone or risk not having fresh material for 10 days. Like, everything is very compact when it comes to road trips, and most of them seem like they have candidates for a trip we can do. The West Coast stuff is out of the way early, so we have options in terms of like, do we do minor league trips instead? Like, it's a nice schedule for the business side of things. That's fine. Yeah, but yeah, when I saw St. Louis in September, Milwaukee in March, is like, ugh.
Yeah,
those are the those were the easy ones, both for just planning and getting people excited about it. I still may go to the St. Louis one just because it's a 4-hour drive from Nashville. And I haven't been to the new Busch Stadium yet. I've only been to the old one, but yeah, I was really hoping for that one just because convenient for everybody, drive, train, fly, nice, bar set up by the ballpark, like easy. And they have it September 12th. Like,
no,
that didn't help. That yeah. But
unless the White Sox are good, if they're marching towards the playoffs, we can do something impromptu. But to do something level of Pittsburgh,
yeah,
no,
yeah, I think it'd be a case of if they're not like marching towards the playoffs, but if they're fun, like we've seen interest, an uptick in interest and subscriptions, and I think just maybe not attendance, but they've talked about the crowds being livelier. I think fans are seeing something like about this team, so I could see like if next year. If it represents progress and the progress is even somewhat linear in terms of like by the end of September, they look like, I always go back to 2019 in terms of like, oh, that was fun, bad, but also like you could see all the pieces coming together and you could see the rookies looking like they're supposed to look. And now is the time to add. Like, I could see September being interesting, even if they're not like on the periphery of the wild card race. But yeah, I would say, if people are super excited about it, a lot of people going, then yeah, we'll get something together. But asking people after bear season, like if they're on pace for 55 wins and the Bears are a different sort of entity in the Ben Johnson era. Yeah. Good luck trying to drum up interest in a September meetup. That it's not going to work.
No. For our West Coast friends, that's San Diego, Anaheim, I have very good friends that live in San Diego. I love that ballpark. With Rock Chalowski being one of the top prospects going to the MLB draft, if UCLA is home that weekend or that midweek series, I may just drag James with me, Jim, to San Diego, and he and I can drive up from San Diego to Anaheim so we can do some more work. But for our West Coast friends, I know you've been asking for us to come out there. I do have those six games circled. So if you want to impromptu meet up in San Diego, but my goal is to meet everyone up, all of our LA contingent in Anaheim next year. I met Hot Dog Larry, Jim. He stopped by Section 108, and that's when all hell broke loose. So Hot Dog Larry, if you're listening to this, you left us when it was 4-0, and the White Sox have been outscored 17-1 ever since then. So you're to blame, sir.
One loose end. Yeah, I had the Charlotte box score open just to tie that up. The Knights did win 11-10. Last three, actually, I should say, the Charlotte bullpen over the last five innings, six walks, one strikeout, eight runs allowed. So, there's no high leverage help coming. There might be some medium leverage at best.
Is Clevinger going to get another shot with the White Sox?
Like I said, if they want to have him to throw like 95 pitches over three, like use them and lose them type usage, like I could see it. But with Cannon and Burke also there, Davitt's interesting in terms of like he requires Rule 5 protection at the end of the year. He only throws like 92, like top shot 92. He's like a kitchen sink righty. But so far, throwing decently to where, you know, if they felt like protecting him, they could call him up. There are other options besides Clevinger. So I would hope not. But yeah, they just want somebody who they don't feel bad about throwing 100 pitches, no matter how many innings it takes. That might be the guy.
Clevinger, how about you start at Yankee Stadium? Go get him. Well, that will do it for this episode.
We didn't buy you a return flight.
You got to find your way from New York. Yeah. Oh, man, that'd be mean, but fitting. That will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. And again, check us out on Saturday for that news and when we decide where the road trip is going to be in 2026 on SoxMachine.com. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You can also listen and watch our videos on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/SoxMachine. We're also on social media. We're on all the platforms at Sox Machine. Even though he wasn't on this podcast today because he's working hard for us late at night, James Fegan will be at the stadium over the weekend covering the White Sox and Yankees game. Follow him on social media at JR Fegan. You can follow me at SoxMachine_Josh. We are on Blue Sky. We're at SoxMachine.com. And also follow us on Instagram. Starting to do a little bit more there with photos and videos. If you're on the gram, we're at SoxMachine. You can help support Sox Machine by becoming a subscriber at SoxMachine.com. Monthly plans start at $5, and that gets you the ad-free version of both the podcast and website. We are having our first Sox Machine Suite Night on Friday night for our Veterans Committee members. Can't wait to see all of our VCs. Some of them will be the first time that Jim and I have gotten a chance to meet up with them. And if you want to learn more about the inner workings of Sox Machine, what our thoughts are, and how we plan for the upcoming season, give us really constructive feedback, because in our group chat, even like for the road trips, we've been a pretty open book as far as our thought process of how we're going to be handling our events. And if you want to provide your feedback and have some say in how we do things at Sox Machine, we do have a couple spots open in our Veterans Committee. So again, we have a vetting process about it because we are sharing some very private information about how we do things at Sox Machine. And you have direct access to James Fegan and Jim to pose questions, or when news does break, we give our honest opinions on how things are shaking out. But if you're interested, go to SoxMachine.com, apply to be part of our Veterans Committee, we'll vet you, and if you're a fit, we'll add you to our VC, and then you get to participate in some really cool things like the Sox Machine Suite Night at Wright Field. Again, we have multiple subscription models. You can become a subscriber at SoxMachine.com. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.